coming up on Thunder Pop.
It is the 58th episode of the Thunder Pop podcast. I'm Stephen Presley, and I'm joined once again by the one and only One's Up.
Oh yeah, Jazz One.
In the Thunder Pop Dome. And I'm excited to have you back. And you were going to come in right after Last Jedi. We were going to do a reaction show. And you had, or I wanted to have you in to do a reaction show after Last Jedi. And I think you got sick. And I didn't know whether you could
oh, do yeah.
it. And it was near the holidays. And so I was like, I didn't want to pressure you. So we waited. But now this cool was, the cool thing is we were going to be able to do kind of a, now things have kind of digested. We've had some time to digest.
Seen it multiple times.
And then we've read all the stuff on the internet, the threads. We're going to do kind of a thing kind of now separated from the time we saw it for the first time. And we can say, what do we think about it now in January?
Oh, yeah.
And here's the other thing with that. Will history be kind to Last Jedi?
See, like, if you think about the prequels, when we walked out of the theater, like, after seeing the prequels... Mm-hmm. We did like the prequels.
Yeah, I mean, I did because it's the first Star Wars in the theater that I'd had in how many years?
15, 16, something like that.
And it seemed a lot longer than that. Yeah. To be honest with you, it seemed much longer.
But so, I mean, yeah, hindsight is 20/20.
It's kind of like if you had, say, you're not going to have a breakfast taco for 15 years. And then you're going to come back to Austin and you're going to have a breakfast taco for the first time in 15 years. But I'm going to take you to like the shittiest one in town. You're still going to probably enjoy it like a lot more than you would have if I just take you to get one right now.
Oh, exactly.
So that's kind of the way it was with the Star Wars prequels, at least with the first of the three.
Yeah.
Getting any Star Wars with good Star Wars. And then, you know, kind of time sets in and you're like, man, I don't know if I was good with that kiddie pod race, if I needed the kiddie pod race. And I don't know what I thought about 3PO without his armor. And that was kind of weird. But I get it because it was showing how he was built and created and came to be. But, you know, I also don't know, like the kid, you know, do I need to go that far back into Anakin Skywalker's origin story?
Yeah.
Could they have just done like maybe, you know, 10 minutes of him as a kid, like they do in some of those movies?
Oh, yeah.
Where they'll be doing kind of the origin story and they're only, I mean, Superman was only a baby for how long in the Superman origin movies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was only a kid for how long in the Superman origin movies?
Hell, Jesus was only a kid for, you know, a few verses.
Yeah. Yeah, so even there. So, I mean, you know, if they do the story of your life, I don't know if we always need that much. We don't need a whole movie, maybe, of. But they did that. They stretched it out. But then the second one comes out. I was kind of excited because Chewbacca was in it.
Yeah.
He had a couple of good scenes in it. But they're like, damn, there was a lot of cartoon effects in that movie. It looked an awful lot like a cartoon more than a live action. I mean, I know that Ewan McGregor was in that film somewhere. I heard his voice, but I saw a lot of cartoon. And then the third one comes out, and I think the third one is worthy of being mentioned, and I would put it in my top tier. I think they rebounded nicely on the third one and made a pretty nice, dark, interesting Star Wars film, but all it shows me was if they had just taken the best parts of the three movies and made one film,
oh yeah,
it would have been a great Star Wars story.
Man, the way I've come to peace with it, it wasn't as good as we thought it was when we left the theater, but they're not quite as bad, you know, when you go back and watch them as we started kind of seeing them later.
Yeah.
It's a gray area.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were some interesting things he worked in. I do respect the fact he said, I'm not going to just make another kind of a carbon copy of what I did with the previous trilogy. I'm going to want to tell, this is a political story. This is showing the behind the scenes of the wheeling and dealing and how the Emperor came to power from behind the scenes. And there's a lot of things that are in there that's real from real history.
Oh, yeah.
That shows you real things that have happened. And he borrowed from World War II for the original trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
And then in this film, he borrowed a lot from, you know, a lot of great history stories about, you know, when dictatorships come into power.
Oh, yeah. It's like I used to just completely hate on the prequels. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine just, like, really opened my mind on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know the level of the writing wasn't that high, but it did hit some like Shakespearean concepts, like the betrayal and stuff. It could have been better, but I don't know. I've come to peace with they're decent movies.
They're decent movies. And especially with Revenge of the Sith, I'll watch that again, especially if it's on TV one day and I'm home and there's nothing to do. I'll flip to that and I'll stay on the movie for most of it. And you know, see Mace Windu and his purple lightsaber again.
Oh, yeah.
Remember how cool that was that they did the purple lightsaber for the first time. And Yoda, getting to see Yoda when he was kind of more of the methodical, wise Yoda and not the kooky dementia Yoda that you get later years, which is still very entertaining Yoda, but it was the more kooky old man Yoda in the old folks' home, where this one you get the more poised Jedi badass Yoda, who really, I've always said, I believe personally Yoda, the greatest Jedi of all time. Greater than Luke Skywalker, greater than Anakin Skywalker, greater than Obi-Wan Kenobi. And the reason I say it is because he was the one that never got taken down in a battle by anyone. Anakin taken down in a battle. Obi-Wan got over on him. Let's face it. He cut his limbs off. He basically dipped him in a hot lava. he gave him a chance to yell for mercy and get out of it. And then he took him down. Anakin was Obi-Wan's bitch. And then Obi-Wan basically, I mean, he did it because it was supposed to bring the Force, you know, things to the middle when he basically stepped back and let Vader strike him down. So you could argue that, well, he didn't get taken down by Anakin, Darth Vader, but that he was definitely killed in a battle, whether it was a surrender or whether it was to bring everything, you know, peace to the Force.
Oh, yeah.
And then Qui-Gon, taken down. Darth Maul whipped out that martial arts and that double-edged lightsaber, and he took down Qui-Gon Jinn. And the Emperor picked up, dropped into that by Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah.
Took him down. Snoke, taken down. Split in half by his apprentice, or by his student. And in very epic fashion, Snoke's taken down. But Yoda goes off into the Dagobah system. Nobody ever got over on Yoda. Yoda trained Luke partially. It was Luke's choice to bail early. Yoda died on his own terms. He just died of old age, I believe. He faded away.
Oh yeah.
But nobody struck him down. He was old. He was 800 and something years old. Anyway. We're going to ask the question, because now as we look back on the prequels, we're going to say the same thing for The Last Jedi, which I believe is the most divisive Star Wars movie ever on the internet by the fans. Maybe not by the critics, but by the fans. What I've been seeing on social media, it seems very divisive. So we're going to ask the question on this episode, will history be kind to The Last Jedi? Theme song now.
And this is just the intro.
Yeah, Jazz One here, Stephen Bresley here. Let me swat that fly. There. I think there was a little bug in the bug. We were being bugged by another podcast. I was trying to record our podcast and then redo it and put it out before we do it. So we got to ask the question, will history be kind to Last Jedi? And that is going to be a question I'm going to ask Jazz One. But to start off, just to kind of stir the pot a little bit of controversy, Anderson Cooper was on Stephen Colbert the other day, and he saw Star Wars. Well, kinda. He walked out early. So let's take a look at this. This is going to be, by the way, this is our thunder take for this episode.
And they don't know they're doing it.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
And what does it mean?
And they all eat smelly cheese. Like, the smellier, the better. It's very strange.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know.
What does it mean, the buh?
It's like, eh. It's like, eh. How would you like Star Wars? Eh. Instead of eh, it's like, yeah.
By the way, have you seen the new Star Wars?
I actually saw it last night. I walked out. I know.
You walked out? I'm sorry.
I got a lot going on. I had a lot of work to do.
So it wasn't a protest?
No, it wasn't a protest. I'm going to go see.
Okay, first of all, CNN is not owned by Disney. So he has no, like, obligations to say he loved or hated it. Because if I worked for ABC, I might be a little scared to badmouth a Disney property.
Again, I had too much in my head. I wanted
to enjoy
it.
Wait a second. So you went, you paid money.
I went down the Cedar.
So he starts off when he's doing the, talking about the, there was another story he was talking about. And then when he asked him if he saw Star Wars, he answers with that, Do you think that was him just kidding around, or do you think, like, subliminally he really didn't like the film and that's why he walked out early?
No. I think I remember when this happened. It was like he just couldn't totally get into it.
I can believe that with this guy, because this is a guy that I think is a workaholic. I think there's certain people in the business you know are workaholics. And one of them, I believe it to be a workaholic, is Anderson Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
I think the other workaholic is... Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, yeah.
And Steve, what's the Family Feud guy? His name's...
Steve Harvey?
Steve Harvey, workaholic. He's even admitted it. He says, hey, look, I'm not turning down a check from nobody. He was asked one time, why do you do so many shows? Like, why do you work so much? And he said, I'm not turning down any checks.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, he does the Family Feud. He does the Steve Harvey talk show. He's done two different versions of the Steve Harvey talk show. He does his radio show still. I mean, if that was one, if there was one I was going to, like, pass on, it'd be that getting up in the early morning and doing that morning show. Because I had an internship / part-time gig at a radio station years ago. It was a rock, classic rock station, the Sharkman morning show. And I know the hours of doing a morning show, and there is no mercy on you when you're getting up at 3:30 in the morning to be there at, you know, 5 or 5:30 to start getting ready for a show. So that would be the one check I would pass on, is the morning show.
Oh, it's like I worked in TV news for a while, and I was working on a morning show.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was like getting up at 2:45 in the morning.
Ridiculous hour. It was just not hours that are not like normal.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're, you know, being a DJ, having been a DJ for a number of years, you're probably used to not even getting home till 2:45 at some of your jobs, some of your gigs. It's the flip-flop schedule.
Oh, yeah.
That from being in the morning news. So, yeah, I believe it. I think he's a workaholic. He's one of the people that does. He does the New Year's special. He does the CNN show. He used to do a 60 Minutes thing. For a while, he was co-hosting. He had his own talk show. He was co-hosting with Kelly Ripa. So he has all these things where he seems the kind of person that doesn't relax much.
Oh, yeah.
He's working a lot.
You paid money, walked in, and it occurred to you in the middle of the movie, I don't have time for
about
this.
About 45 minutes. Yeah. I was like, I'm not giving this the attention it deserves.
Which is really a compliment.
Yeah, no, I was like, this deserves my attention.
Yes.
I'm not giving it my attention.
It's like if you're making love to someone. In the middle of it, you go, you know what? I'm not giving this my all. I should come back.
That's a funny joke. You know what the difference of that? If back in the day, if Arsenio had been doing the same interview, he would have made that same joke, but he would have got up and started doing the gyration. It's like in the middle of making love, and then all of a sudden you stop. It's like, oh, damn, I forgot to turn the stove off or something like that. So Arsenio's would have had a little more of a physical reenactment.
Oh, yeah.
Let's put a pin in this. Let's table this for a moment so I can give full focus.
Yeah. I did see I, Tanya. Have you seen I?
I have not.
Okay, so it was a longer Star Wars film than the ones in the past. I think by 20, 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Longer. And there was a lot of stuff being told there in the story. So there was a lot of, they needed that extra time, really. So he didn't finish it. I would be pissed, though, if it was a friend of mine and they told me they left Star Wars early. I'd give him a hard time about that.
Man, I can see that. But to me, it's almost like reading a book. Like, there's sometimes you just sit down, you got too much going on. You know, you need to do something else, and you just can't get into the book. You know, it's like I said in the last episode I was here for, it, man, Star Wars is more than a movie. You know,
yeah,
there's something special about it, and I can respect that he took off because he couldn't focus on it. I mean, there was a lot in that in The Last Jedi. You know, it's like I had to like marinate for a day or two.
Yeah, you need to be like, you need the time to focus on it, and then you need one where you can go in and then catch all the stuff that you missed the first time. So, yeah, I think, have you ever done that with a film where you actually literally realized you had too much to do and you had to leave a movie early?
can't think that I have. I mean, I've probably done that with Netflix or...
Oh, I do that with TV shows all the time, or movies at home.
Yeah.
That I start and they're like, man, I really do need to get this chore done or errand run or whatever. So I do that with TV shows. I started, binging. I got through Black Mirror pretty quick. I got through Stranger Things pretty quick. But I was halfway through Fuller House, and then I dropped in the middle of an episode because I had some stuff to do, and I thought Fuller House would still be waiting on me when I got back.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about Black Mirror sometime soon.
Oh, you know what? I agree. Why don't we just do a whole episode on it?
Oh, like episode 59?
I think we should.
Dude, that's a great idea.
There's a promo for episode 59. check for it. It's coming soon. So, yeah, I think I've walked out of movies. I can think of maybe two times I actually walked out of a movie just because I the movie was not jiving for me. One of them was a movie from the 90s. It was with Kris Kristofferson. I think it was called Millennial or Millennium. Millennium, I think is the name of the movie. And it was a sci-fi movie. It just was I've sat through movies that were subpar, but I could always find an excuse or a reason to stick with it. You know, part of it would be just maybe because I invested X amount of time. So there are very few movies that I paid money in the theater. And I can only think of maybe twice. One of them was that I think it's called Millennium. It was a movie that bombed hugely with Kris Kristofferson. That I remember walking out not being very good.
Green Lantern.
That is one that I caught on TV one day, and I ended up, the volume ended up going down on that film pretty quick. It was with Millennium came out in 1989 actually.
Ooh.
And it was, it got 3 stars on IMDb, which is very generous. It's with Cheryl Ladd and Kris Kristofferson, and that was in 1989. It's been so long since I've seen it. What was it about? An NTCB investigator. An NTSB investigator seeking the cause of an airline disaster meets a warrior woman from 1,000 years in the future. She replaces the people from airplanes before they crash with corpses with the same features.
Oh, that's based on a true story.
I knew it. Was it Oliver Stone doing it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was quite a while ago. I wonder if the reviewers thought, well, it got 5 out of 10 or 5 point something out of 10. Okay, here one person wrote, there seems to be some dispute here as to whether this is a good movie or not, and it all depends on what you expect going into it. If you go see or rent a sci-fi movie based on an obscure short story directed by the man who made Bo Derek battling a whale in Orca 12 years earlier, you have to expect some campiness. Just sit back and enjoy it. Yeah. I like campiness. You know, I like the Sharknadoes.
Yeah, it's like I can hate watch some stuff.
Yeah, I like Snakes on a Plane. But this one was a bland campiness. Anyway, there that is. So, thoughts on Last Jedi? Jazz one.
Man, just the more time after, the better it gets to
me. Yeah.
You know, it's like the people who complain about this movie, everything they just said is wrong.
Yeah.
To quote Luke.
Now, what do you think about the whole thing with Mark Hamill, where he had originally had some disagreements with the direction they were taking? Now, he's taken that back and said, you know, he got it right after I had time with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things, like, if you marinate it on a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, you really get it. And I also think some of that, the issues he had with it, was probably more like clickbait. You know, mm-hmm. like, he probably meant one thing, and mm-hmm. then all these websites pick up, you know. Mark Hamill hates Last Jedi.
Excerpts of a piece of an interview, yeah. or this or that, and then just kind of blow it up into proportion with an article attached to it that kind of paints a bigger picture even than what yeah. the video does.
Yeah.
And then the topic or the headline of the article is even more extraordinary.
Exactly.
Now, can you imagine, though, the difficulty of working, okay, being a, you know, but these guys aren't rookies, like Rian Johnson, J.J. Abrams, but they're not Steven Spielberg either. They're not the Ron Howards and Steven Spielbergs that have been decades in the film industry.
Yeah.
So compared to a Ron Howard or a Steven Spielberg or one of those directors, they're you know, they're still youngins, but they're not, you know, Rian Johnson a little bit more of a rookie than, say, J.J. Abrams. But none of them are rookies, but they do have considerably less years clocked in than some of these veteran actors that they're having to direct in these Star Wars films. Like Harrison Ford, done numerous, I don't know how many films. You look up his IMDb, I'm sure it's ridiculous.
Oh, it's crazy.
I mean, I'm guessing since he's been making movies since the 70s, and there was a streak there where he was probably coming out with about 2 films a year.
Oh, yeah.
Through the 80s and 90s. So he's probably got, I mean, probably close to 70 appearances in films, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah.
That's not even to mention the Star Wars Christmas special.
I heard it's canon.
Yeah, that's what they say. So there you have that. I mean, you got Mark Hamill, who, again, a veteran in the industry, not nearly as many films as Harrison Ford, but he's been in TV show pilots. He was in voiceover work, numerous voiceover work he's done for video games and animation. He's gone and done stage. He did a number of years on stage in London and in New York.
Oh, yeah. And Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Exactly.
What was he, Cock Knocker?
Yeah. And Kevin Smith, quite proud of the fact that he got to work with Mark Hamill, have Mark Hamill work with him on that film, being he was such a huge fan of Mark Hamill's. So Mark, having worked on many, many different projects over the years, so he, you know, he's going to feel like a seasoned veteran himself, and deservedly so. Carrie Fisher. And then you have these actors like Anthony Daniels playing 3PO, Peter Mayhew. Some people will tell you that Anthony Daniels, especially, and our very own Reed Charles, after having met Peter Mayhew, Chewbacca, at a convention, they'll both tell you that, people will tell you that there's some divas there. Divas in gold armor and divas in brown fur. and they're not even the biggest commodities or stars of the original Star Wars franchise. The characters are huge stars. They did a lot for the characters and what they contributed in bringing those characters to life. But they're definitely a lot more replaceable than a Harrison Ford or a Carrie Fisher. It's sometimes always the least important ones that are the biggest divas.
Oh, dude, playing shows and shooting interviews and stuff. It's like some of the biggest artists ever, like, are the coolest people.
Yeah.
But it's like some of these people that are just blowing up, you know, are like divas. I'm like,
they're going to be the biggest divas, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
It's funny how that works. And sometimes it's about needing to get kind of rocked up a little, or shaken up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And go through some shit. And then some people come out of that better people than they were when they went in, because they have to go through the shit first.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They almost have to go through the rise, the fall. They have to have their behind the music special, like, a little bit, and go through the ups and the downs, and then they come out of it better people. And that's why, you know, people like, you know, Bruce Springsteen have reputations for being terrific people. Lionel Richie, everybody that's ever mentioned having come into contact with Lionel Richie. I worked at the health food store in L.A. Paul McCartney came in a few times, and I always missed him. But everybody said they came into contact with him, said he was one of the most humble, most awesome people that they had ever met. I got to meet Little Richard. He was very frail and old at the time, but he was a sweet guy, very much lived up to the hype. But then, yeah, you've got someone that just dropped a first album, and they're only a year in, or they're maybe they've got one song but hasn't even charted yet. Those are going to be the people that are going to be
in
the top. So the reputation actually for difficulty came more from rumors about Anthony Daniels. And, you know, he had that red arm in the Force Awakens. And they did a comic book that backstoried why the 3PO had the red arm. It was a really interesting story. And then in Last Jedi, suddenly the red arm's missing. And I haven't done enough research on that yet. I'm kind of curious if there's some stuff on the internet. People haven't even been, of all the things people have been talking about, well, Last Jedi, they haven't gotten to that one yet, why the red arm was gone. But what I do know is that he was not happy about the red arm idea and did not want to wear the red arm in Force Awakens and made a huge stink about it. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you think it's quite an undertaking for someone like J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson to juggle these seasoned, veteran, iconic personalities, actors in one room, being kind of a sort of they were like in their crib, babies in diapers when these Star Wars movies were first coming out.
Oh yeah, man, it's just it's gotta be like a heavy, I don't know, burden, like to be, you know, have this on your back, you know, like it could either flop and be horrible or, you know, good. It's on you. You know,
do you think you've got like there's some of the little bit of a busybodies they're running up to you and they're constantly bugging you about, oh, this is not what should be in the Star Wars story because this doesn't fit with this part of the canon, or he would never do this or never do that. Do you think that starts to get grating after a while?
It must, but I don't know how seriously a lot of that was taken. Like The Last Jedi was a departure, uh-huh. You know. Like, a lot of people complained about The Force Awakens being a retread of A New Hope. And then, you know, Johnson comes in there and just gives you something you've never seen.
He shook it up. He gave you, said, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, I mean, it's not this trilogy's Empire, but it sort of is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it doesn't hit the same beats mm-hmm. as Empire.
Yeah.
But,
which is on purpose.
Yeah.
Very much so. Not accidental. Yeah, I mean, he did that for a reason. You know, it's funny because they had, and I didn't have the problem. I understood that, yeah, it did match a lot of the beats from A New Hope with The Force Awakens, but it didn't bother me that much. It didn't bother me as much as it bothered some other people.
Yeah.
I was cool with it. But at the same time, I said, you know, you'll have to shake it up a little bit going forward because I think it works for the first act because you're having to reestablish, you're having to do something that, for some people, the prequels didn't do.
Oh, yeah.
And that was reconnect them to the magic that they felt, you know. I was, during times and stretches of the prequels, felt reconnection to the magic. It wasn't a consistent flow throughout the entire film, but there would be times when I felt reconnection to the magic. There was to be some lightsaber battles,
man,
in the prequels,
like,
that would reconnect me to the magic.
As soon as the logo and the horns start in the beginning of the intro.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm 7 years old again.
Yeah.
Like, that's a crazy feeling. Like, every Star Wars movie I've seen since I was 7 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes you back to that moment. And it's like sometimes finding that magic.
Yeah, the scroll to me is a big part of it. And I'm wondering now that since Disney acquired 20th Century Fox, that they're going to bring back that intro that could come before the intro.
That would be cool. It wouldn't, influence me, you know, too much either way. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's not as important as the scroll. It's secondary for the scroll. You know, what's funny is I went and saw that film. You were almost going to go with us. We were at the Evo and I saw that I'd never been to a movie at the Evo, and everything about the Evo was top notch, from a Sith milkshake before the movie.
Oh yeah.
To a Han Solo sandwich or burger. So they had a full-on Star Wars menu that was knocking it out of the park. A little bit slow getting the food out there. I think they had a lot of newbies working that were kind of in training. So a Sith milkshake, it took a long time. It was not light speed.
Oh!
Yeah, but once we got the food, it was great. And then they had a nice stadium seating.
Oh, yeah.
So the trailer's rolling. It's blaring loud. Well, the trailers and previews are rolling.
Yeah.
Before the film, I should say, it's blaring loud. And we were like, whoa, that's almost too loud. That's like crazy loud. And then when the film starts, it was almost not loud enough, ironically. I almost like, could they turn it up just a few notches? So it's funny. It's almost like they have some old people out in Kyle that complain about the sound and they make them turn the movie down
lower. Well, it's like, been out there for one other movie and it's like, they really sell that sound. There's a special thing. But yeah, man, I was really wanting to see it with you guys. But man, like that day I was like snotting and coughing.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, you know. If I get Papa Presley sick, then I might get Little One sick, and it's like, I don't want to.
We gave you props to for your Jedi ways for sacrificing and not coming to the film, because I know it was hard for you. Did you kind of like get it ready and kind of get it going for the next day?
Actually, you wound up being able to swap the ticket. It was surprisingly. Kyle is, what, about 10 minutes outside of Austin?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Austin, if you don't buy your movie tickets early, you know, you're not going to get in.
Now, especially for the Alamos and those places.
But 10 minutes out of town, like, there was good seats.
Makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
I probably got people around me sick that day, but I still saw The Last Jedi.
Saw the film. You were in there in a scrub surgical mask watching the film. People thought you were trying to do some Star Wars bounty hunter character. You could have went in like a Princess Leia costume and would have been kind of a cosplay going on. So the thing is, what's funny is some teenagers come rolling in kind of late. The movie's about to start, and they're in a row in front of us. They're chit-chatting throughout the scroll. They're standing in front of us throughout the scroll, still chit-chatting. So I'm wondering, I had to kind of move to the side, kind of look through two of them to see the scroll. I closed one ear so I wouldn't have to hear them chit-chatting, and so I could have my ear to the side where I could hear this. You know, the music. I'm like, that's sacrilegious. How dare they come in late and talk during. So these were teenagers, like high school kids. And I'm wondering, is it to these high school kids that part of the film? Because, you know, nowadays in movies, television, intros are not as drawn out and as big production.
Yeah.
It kind of gets to that when you got the black mirrors of the world that have just sort of a little thing that opens up, a quick little logo and a sound effect. There's not a substantial amount of music. I mean, even when they rebooted the show Dallas for a couple of years, they had that same intro, which to me was a big part of the iconic Dallas experience, was to see the Dallas skyline and then hear that instrumental song.
I can hear
song.
It in my head right now.
Yeah, that dun, 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 dun. But I didn't catch it until later. Even that was shortened down a little bit.
Oh, wow.
For the modern day audience. So introductions, you know, I just saw a documentary on YouTube that I just stumbled on. That was about the production behind the opening scene for Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah.
Which is one of the most iconic openings in television history. And that was a whole film crew that went on location for a week in Minneapolis to shoot a big production, a big budget opening for the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And it was a real thing, like with extras, and they had to block off streets. And now today, something like that, going into an intro. So you think the high school kids, it's just not as important to them, the scroll?
Oh, man, I don't know.
I know they love Star Wars, because my nephew, who's a senior in high school, loves Star Wars. My other nephew, younger than that, loves Star Wars. He's already had, you know, a handful of the toys. You know, he's dressed up at least once for Halloween in a Star Wars costume.
Yeah.
So they love it. Their first experience with it was with the prequels and the Clone Wars. So for them, it was a different, you know, introduction into the Star Wars galaxy than it was for us, like how they were introduced to it. But they were still huge fans. Like I remember watching the Clone Wars with my nephew and how important that was to him to watch the Clone Wars.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I wonder if the scroll, because of them growing up, not as much introductions, not in the openings and there's a name in television for that opening. I think it's called
cold open.
Cold open. Yeah. It's not cold opens. Just don't matter anymore.
That's
my theory. So anyway, what else on The Last Jedi?
Oh man. I don't know. It's like the people who are having issues with it. I just don't get it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there was like, there's some stuff that frustrated me at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I think if I was really pressed to have an issue with it, it would be the end of The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Now, No, it's like we were expecting a lot of answers with The Last Jedi, right?
Yeah.
But, no, we didn't get the answers that we wanted, but we got some. So recently I went back and watched, we call it The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
And in the very last scene with Luke and Rey, you know, they'd sit there. Okay, mm-hmm. Spoiler alert. No, it's like Luke gets the lightsaber and tosses it, right?
Yeah.
Now, in the movie, the Force Awakens, I timed it when I watched it the other day.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, it was 35 seconds. I'm starting 35 seconds now. Uh-huh. You're Luke, I'm Rey, right? Okay. All right, we're just staring at each other. Yeah. I've got a lightsaber in my hand. We're staring. 26 seconds. See, it goes on forever.
It's a very dramatic.
Yeah, so we're still staring at each other.
Yeah.
Now we're 15 seconds away. Like, 35 seconds is a long time.
That's a long stare.
Still, like, 7 seconds more, right?
I would have asked for a bottle of water at least after that walk up that mountain.
All right. So, 35 seconds. 35 seconds. Now, I understand if Rey shows up there and mm-hmm. hands the lightsaber to Luke, he takes it and tosses it.
Yeah.
But no. Like, Luke Skywalker sat there looking at her like, no, we don't know. I mean, for us, it felt like 2 years.
Yeah.
In the movie, it's 35 seconds. We just did 35 seconds of just looking at each other. No, I'm Rey, you're Luke. And then he tosses it. To me, that's a dick move. You know, it's a dick move if he just takes the lightsaber and tosses it.
To wait that long?
Yeah.
And to sit there and wait.
35 seconds. Yeah. That was a pretty lengthy time. I mean, that's not even adding the time in the beginning of the Last Jedi. Like, that's my minutia if I had to complain about anything. Like, that was a dick move.
You know what's funny is a story just came out about that where Mark Hamill had apparently intervened when he thought there was going to be a continuity issue.
Yeah.
Because he said they originally had shot on the Abrams side with Force Awakens. The scene was going to have him floating on the boulders when she shows up.
Yeah.
And then it was going to open, it was supposedly the plan would be to open with that. But when he read the script for Last Jedi, Rian Johnson's side of things, and saw that Luke was going to come back, but sort of disconnected himself from the Force.
Yeah.
He said, that's going to be an issue with me and the boulders. So he immediately reached out when he read. So I guess he had got the script for Last Jedi when they were finishing up and there was still time to do reshoots for Force Awakens. He reached out to Abrams and Rian Johnson to point out this issue. And they had told him, according to the press that I read, they had reassured him that they had it all under control and they had already figured that out.
Oh, wow.
So that's interesting, though, that he was worried. He was right. I mean, right to worry about that.
Oh, yeah. So I was talking about watching The Force Awakens after having seen The Last Jedi. I watched it the other day, and you see some. No, we didn't get all the answers that we wanted, but we got some, and you see some things different when you watch The Force Awakens again. Rey's Force vision.
Yeah.
Like, cue it up. I want you to see something. See if you notice this. She's looking around. She's to the chest.
Now, this is from Force Awakens.
Yes.
This is a scene where she goes up after meeting with Maz Kanata and she opens up the chest in that tunnel.
Exactly.
And there's a lightsaber that she eventually presents to Luke on Act 2 at the end of the film.
Now watch the vision.
I hear Darth Vader. The lights come on. It's a long tunnel. Collapse. R2.
Okay, so this was explained.
Yeah.
The R2 and a Luke.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going. What's that? What's that?
Yeah.
Does that look like a Praetorian Guard helmet?
Yes.
And that's Kylo sticking a lightsaber through him. Like, was that a foreshadowing? I mean, I know what the red room was in the rain, but I thought it was interesting that that was Kylo. Didn't he kill one of the Praetorian guards in that same
after,
way?
After the Snoke.
Yeah.
After they kill Snoke, and then they say, okay, we got these guys' guards to worry about now.
Yeah.
And then they both collaborate but on the
fighting
the guards.
Didn't Kylo just, like, put a lightsaber?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I thought there was some foreshadowing that
yeah.
I would have never thought about when I saw it, but seeing The Force Awakens after The Last Jedi,
yeah,
I'm like, ah.
I know that one of the things when Rian Johnson was named as director, he had meetings with J.J. Abrams, and J.J. Abrams still executive producer of Last Jedi, so
yeah.
he's still involved in having that credit, which is pretty substantial. So he was on the set some. He didn't have to be on the set nearly as much as a director as Rian Johnson would have had to be on the set, obviously. But I know they met, and they had some things, like Rian Johnson had asked Abrams for to be able to set things up for him in the Last Jedi, like to include in Force Awakens.
Oh, wow.
So maybe they had to be done in reshoots.
Yeah.
To be able to make it, to be able to fill his. And so now I'm sure the same thing's going to be as it was done. And they had a lot less time to work because J.J. Abrams was a replacement director for Colin Trevorrow. So they may not have had the window of time to work.
Yeah.
But I wonder if a similar meeting took place from 8 to 9 now, where they asked, he asked for some things to be included in Last Jedi.
Oh, here one of the complaints is like, we didn't really get an explanation of who Snoke was.
Yeah, and I think that I don't have as, that again, that's something that I don't have as big a problem with as some of the haters do.
But it's like in Empire, we didn't get a lot of background.
No. We didn't get a lot on Darth Vader in the first film, except for that he had been connected to Obi-Wan from their past, them having some history together. But beyond that, we didn't know. And of course, backstories and origins and all that stuff was less demanded from the fan base in the 1970s, where now people like their stories to have you know, a backstory, and they want an origin, and they want the layers and understand all the layers.
Well, I think I heard in an interview that Johnson was talking about if Snoke was to explain who he was, where he's from, or whatever, mm-hmm. like that really wouldn't mean much to them at the time, you know.
Yeah.
In the
as the story's
being
well, I like some stuff to be trickled out over time. I don't want everything, all the goods to be.
I mean, it's kind of like a Bond villain, you know, explain the whole.
Yeah, to do. Now, I would eventually like to know about Snoke.
Yeah.
But I can wait to open. I don't have to open all my presents at once.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think that also gives them, from a business standpoint, it gives them opportunities to do sell books, because there would be Snoke books.
Oh, yeah.
With stories, origin stories of Snoke. It also gives them a chance if they wanted to include Snoke in other films. Like Johnny Lightfoot was here recently, and we fantasized about the idea of a Luke Skywalker or anthology series based on the books that they made recently about Luke Skywalker and what he was doing between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens, and all the various stories and adventures that they had included in that book about Luke Skywalker. I think it's called The Adventures, or something like The Adventures of Luke Skywalker, or something along those lines. And there's all these great stories about the legend of Luke Skywalker. So I thought, oh, how cool would that be for like a Netflix TV show or a Disney streaming TV show just on that? And you'd hope you could get Mark Hamill to do it, and then maybe it would be a limited series, kind of like what X-Files has been doing the last couple of years, where they do maybe six to eight episodes a year, but they're real high production value. Again, like Black Mirror would be another good example.
Oh, we should so talk about Black Mirror.
I think so, too. When are we going to get around to that?
Episode 59.
Oh, I love it. I love it. There's a lot to talk about with Black Mirror. We keep talking about foreshadowing a future episode. I'm looking straight at the Black Mirror on my iPhone.
Hot damn.
It's another kind of foreshadowing. Yeah. So, I don't even know what we were talking about.
Last Jedi.
Last Jedi. Yeah, that's it. Anyway, yeah, no, I knew that. I guess I knew that. No, I didn't really know that. But anyway, yeah, so Last Jedi, and that is interesting about how they had But yeah, I told Johnny I'd love that show. I would love that idea for a show. And so just as a hypothetical, when they have to make a new Star Wars movie every year, because that's what Disney has decided they're committed to doing, and then they're going to do Star Wars TV shows, they're going to go back to some of these characters, like they're doing with the Han Solo movie, and they're going to do prequels to some of these characters, some of the more popular characters. Eventually, we're going to get a Boba Fett film somewhere. We're probably going to get another Darth Vader film somewhere. But it leaves it open for them to do what they want with Snoke later, in terms of, like, if he's included in a Luke Skywalker, Legends of Luke Skywalker story, they have a little more flexibility because they didn't dump all the origin out at once on him.
Oh, yeah.
So they can kind of trickle that out. People would watch the third episode of The Legends of Luke Skywalker as soon as they find out that we're going to get the origin of Snoke included in that episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's how you're going to find it.
Man, there's a podcast, I can't remember the name of it right now, about Star Wars. And they've used a term that I really like, headcanon. You know, it's like a lot of these people who's had issues with the movies, like it doesn't fit their headcanon. You know, it's like you kind of imagine where the story should go. Like we, you know, the last episode I was here, man, we were talking about predictions. Man, none of them came true. No.
Yeah. Did we get anything?
I think
there?
Luke dying. But I don't think that was
tossed out.
Yeah.
Was tossed out at some point. Yeah. We had, I think we already kind of knew that there was going to be a face off with Finn and Captain Phasma.
Yeah.
We knew that was going to happen. Kind of the trailers, I think, had kind of leaked that or indicated that. Now, the one that we were sort of on the fence, we decided, no, Chewbacca would not eat a porg.
Oh, I laughed so hard when I saw that because I've been joking about eating porg.
Yes. And then all of a sudden, damn, he might eat a porg. Now, he certainly, spoiler alert, he certainly cooked a porg.
Yeah, and like, okay, you get the porgs with the puppy dog eyes, and he's like, oh, don't eat my brother. But like, where was he, like, when Chewbacca, you know, killed a porg, skinned a porg, you know, cooked a porg?
They waited until it was already, they were kind of, like, waited too long.
Exactly.
Well, and some people that are passionate hunters and passionate carnivores believe that once you kill the animal, it's disrespectful to waste the meat.
Man, I think Chewbacca became a vegan like in that episode.
I know.
Like that was all that last show was about, how Chewie became a vegan.
If there was ever a propaganda for veganism and Chewbacca being used as a poster child for that. It was in that film. I want to do some research to find out if Rian Johnson is a vegan.
Oh, that would be funny if he was.
If he turns out to be a vegan, I'm like, or the writer, whoever he collaborated with on the writing of that. Yeah. You know, actually, I'd had the book pre-ordered since October, and it was on Amazon as a Christmas present to our baby.
Yeah.
I got him Chewy and the Porks, the book, the children's book. And it's got great artwork in it. It's an amazing book. Really is a fun read. But it gives the backstory of what Chewbacca was doing while Rey was with Luke on Act 2, and what was going on with him and what led up to that whole thing with the porgs.
Oh, wow.
And that eventual, you know, face-off he had with them, I guess you could say. But he was, you know, for one thing, it also has a little bit of more backstory on Wookiees in general.
Yeah.
Apparently, Wookiees are always hungry. Like, they are never not hungry.
Huh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's hard for them to not be hungry because they're always not hungry. I mean, they're always hungry. They're never not hungry. So apparently also it said the Wookiee's favorite food is Blue Puffs, something called Blue Puffs from the Star Wars galaxy.
Is that cereal?
Star Wars universe. It sounds like it. It does come in packages. So according to the book, the Millennium Falcon is generally always stocked up on Blue Puffs for Chewie. So he always got a stash of Blue Puffs. Well, what we don't see in the film, they allude to it, but we don't see it directly, is the porgs broke into the Falcon and they ransacked Chewie's Blue Puff stash.
Oh, no.
And they took his Blue Puffs and ate them.
I would seriously be eating a porg.
Yes, that's only fair, isn't it? They ate his food. So that's why he was so desperate. He was fine. He was going to be good. As long as he had his Blue Puffs, he wasn't going to go try to hunt for a porg. So the next step after that was he wanted to go fishing. And he went to the natives, the people that are the caretakers of the planet.
Oh, the fish nuns.
The planet, you know, yeah. The people that are in the village that keep getting annoyed with Ray because she keeps causing havoc. Well, those characters, Chewie goes to him and communicates with him and says, wants to find out about fishing on the planet. And they tell him that fishing season is over, that fish are out of season. Apparently, they were saying you were not going to be able to get a fish this time of year. Which is
odd. Like you don't have no fishing license.
You don't have. I guess it's another way to tell him he doesn't have a fishing license. And he was going to have to wait for the red tape and processing time to get. And he wasn't willing to wait that long. So Chewie apparently ends up going and trying to fish anyway, to try to fish. But that's what leads up to him trying to eat a pork.
Oh, wow.
As a spoiler alert, if you were waiting on that book, I'm sorry. I gave all the spoilers to Chewie and the porks. But it's got some cool artwork in it, and then it shows how Chewie eventually becomes friends with the porgs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun. I thought the porgs was a highlight, and that scene, though, was pretty damn hilarious.
Man, it's like, I may pick up, like, the novelization of The Last Jedi. Like, mm-hmm. I've heard, like, there's stuff that doesn't, you don't know in the movie that, mm-hmm. I mean, it'll be, like, some small things, but, man... It was, The Last Jedi was just, like, so, I don't know, packed. Like, it was so thick.
If you do nothing else, then get Chewie and the porks. But I had ordered it in October, and for some reason, I don't know why it didn't occur to me that it wouldn't just ship. And then I got the red little message saying, we'll ship December 15th.
Yeah.
So, literally, just 4 hours after I had left the theater, it's sitting on the porch. It's there.
Wow.
I mean, the UPS guy must have been literally circling around the block until it was time they got the clearance from Disney to drop off those books.
Wow.
Because of the spoilers, the potential spoilers that are in that book, we would have already known the answers to whether... you know, sometimes those books ship out. They're not supposed to ship out early.
Yeah,
sometimes
I've heard
they ship
about
out.
That.
Sometimes they ship out early on accident, by mistake. And then those pictures always end up on the internet.
Oh, damn.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. If I had gotten that book early, I would have been right here on the podcast with the pages open up, reading it to people on the podcast, and I would have pushed that like clickbait like nobody's business. Yeah. Chewie ate a pork, or Chewie almost ate a pork. Listen now on the new episode. Here's some 16 good movies that open to bad reviews.
Ah, what are they?
Let's take a look. Let's see these. Psycho in 1960, Alfred Hitchcock's classic Psycho movie. So it talks about there's no accounting for taste as evidenced by the full-heartedly reception certain cinematic gems initially garner. These 16 films exemplify that as well as any others. You'll find most of them with the click of a TV remote because that's how ambiguous these once-panned titles have become. And so then you go down here and you can see Psycho 1990. The public went berserk for Psycho in 1960, but critics were not crazy about Alfred Hitchcock's seminal thriller. Today we think of it as part of the horror genre's framework, but it was initially seen as melodramatic, cheap, and a low point in the director's career.
Wow.
So that, I mean, Hitchcock is one of the most copied and emulated directors ever.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
And that scene, that shower scene, is one of the most talked about scenes in all cinema ever. Pretty Woman in 1990, seen as a defining romantic comedy and a star vehicle for then burgeoning America's sweetheart, Julia Roberts. I still love Julia Roberts. Pretty Woman was met with a vitriol of certain critics who deemed its Cinderella story as a tale of greed instead of love. Entertainment Weekly's Owen Gleiberman was the most vocal. He gave the film a D, challenging its values under the pretense that Robert's character becomes a better person when she lands a rich guy and learns to cry at the opera. I'll admit it's a cheese fest. It's a fun early 90s, late 80s cheese fest. It's a nice little don't take it too serious
kind of
rom-com, you know. My wife, she hates the movie. She agrees with this critic. She thinks the premise of a that it's kind of like that Prince Charming is going to save the day.
Isn't it like a kind of a loosely based on, was it Pygmalion?
Oh, which is
like some classic literature. I think we all read it in 12th grade or something.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It was a modernized version of that. But she finds it offensive that it was a prostitute and then this millionaire, and that the millionaire is going to save the prostitute. And she just found that kind of hokey. that was going to be the savior for the prostitute. Caddyshack, Bill Murray, 1980.
Get out.
The shtick of Caddyshack wasn't on par with critical preferences when it opened in July 1980. Harold Ramis, golf comedy garnered several high-profile eviscerations, including one from Roger Ebert, who wrote, It wanders off in all directions in search of comic inspiration. You know what I think about that? I think of... Now, Harold Ramis went on to be one of the most respected, you know, comedy producers of our time.
Yeah.
You know, so you're going into, then you go into Ghostbusters later, and not to mention many of the other films that he was part of. But I look at that as being sometimes kind of when new blood comes into the film industry, new fresh blood comes in, and with their new ideas and new approaches on doing things, it's sometimes people are split on the opinion. And that's happened in years over as comedy has changed and evolved, and the way comedy is done and written and approached, it sometimes people can be very divisive.
Oh yeah, it's like man, I know you're also a DJ. It's like same thing with music, you know.
Yeah,
how something will, you know,
something
will
start new, yeah. Something new comes out in music. They try something new. It's very divisive. People are in disagreement about it.
Oh yeah, no, it's like. Like Migos, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Migos is the modern Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't ever quite get the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
You know, like the lyrics, you know, the lyricism really wasn't there.
Right.
But when I seen live video of them performing, mm-hmm. it's that interplay in between them.
Right.
And
it's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, it's like I saw Migos do a radio interview
mm-hmm.
where they were reading a children's book, Llama Llama Red Pajama.
Uh-huh.
And just seeing them take that book and Migos it out, I'm like, oh, it's the interplay in between, you know, the three of them.
That's fun. Anything new like that. And I think that maybe it's possible in 1980, even though Harold Ramis' comedy became very mainstream and traditional,
yeah.
his approach on Caddyshack may have been just sort of unique and different in 1980. I mean, there's probably a time where people were pretty split on Richard Pryor and comedians like Eddie Murphy.
Carlin.
Carlin was the one I was trying to think of as well. I know Sam Kinison was, there were people that just absolutely hated him, Sam Kinison, and thought he was a maniac, and there were other people that thought he was a genius and it was quite innovative.
Oh yeah.
So same thing in films. Okay, Drop Dead Gorgeous, that was in 1999, a more recent film, so it's on there. Fight Club, 1999.
Man, Fight Club. Man, it was like, okay, when I first moved to Austin, you know, like having the Dolby, the Draft House and stuff. Like, I was an independent and foreign film nerd. Like, I wasn't happy to find a place where I could find, you know, see movies. That, like, when award shows come around, like, I've seen those movies.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's like, I remember the year that Fight Club came out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, it's down at the Googleplex. I'm not going to watch this mainstream crap. And I missed it on video. I missed it on everything. And I think I finally saw it. Well, maybe HBO or something.
Yeah.
Like, so you know, whatever bit. The cycle was 9 months later. And it was like, damn, this is good. You know, uh-huh. like this flew under my radar just because I thought I was like, had my indie film nerd license.
Yeah. So if it wasn't indie enough. You're not there.
Yeah. It snuck under my radar. And it's like, man, occasionally the system, Hollywood, what have you, occasionally they do, you know, just nail it.
Uh-huh. And bring you something just really fresh and innovative. Fight Club has fermented into something of a macho wet dream, but a significant faction of critics and moviegoers moviegoers was disdainful of David Fincher's film upon its release. Part of that may be due to 20th Century Fox's struggles to market the film, an adaptation of Chuck Palahniuk's gritty debut novel. Whatever the reasons, writers criticized its philosophy as a paint-by-numbers nihilism and labeled it tedious. Fincher became one of the first directors to supervise the DVD release of his film, loading it with special features and packaging that's credited for helping turn Fight Club into a cult smash. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So sometimes films need training wheels on the back end to be able to get people to say, okay, now I get it. I kind of, it's so different. It's so out there. I remember, you know, Quentin Tarantino early on, his films being quite divisive. There were people that were either very much into a Quentin Tarantino film, and it was usually of age. People, anyone over a certain age group didn't get a Quentin Tarantino film.
Oh, yeah.
So Bonnie and Clyde, that goes back to the 1967. So it's another older one that's on this list. 16 good movies that opened to bad reviews.
The Shining.
The Shining in 1980.
Man.
That's Here's Johnny.
Has it ever occurred to you what would happen to my future if I were to fail to live up to my responsibilities? Has it ever occurred to you? Has it?
Stay away from me.
Why?
I just want to go back to my room.
Why?
Well, I'm very confused. I just need a chance to think things over.
You've had your whole fucking life to think things over.
Man, my, Meg, my late fiance, man, she was from Colorado, and she would tell me about getting snowed in. Like, man, it's like I saw The Shining. Like, all work and no play makes Jazzy a dull boy. like I'm not getting snowed in anywhere. Like, I'm not going to Colorado in the winter. Like, I'm not getting snowed in.
You
like,
gladly visit in the summer.
I've seen The Shining.
Footloose, 1984. Now, that one I get because it was sort of it was very much a movie about of the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it had, you know, the young stars. It had Kevin Bacon. And it's sort of a movie. I mean, think about it. It's a film that everybody's going to get it, especially at the time.
My family moved from Shreveport, I'd say of about 200,000 people, to the small town where my pops is from. Had 600 people. Dude, when I saw Footloose, I empathized so much with it. Like, like I connect to this, you know?
Yeah, you know, being, if you're from a town that is a little bit, you know, uptight.
Yes.
It's conservative.
I just wanted to angry dance in warehouses.
That's it. That's all you needed. That's how you keep from becoming The Shining.
100.
Yeah, you need Footloose. That's what will save you from that.
Exactly.
You know, and so sometimes there's just very divisiveness. You know, I stayed away from all through the holidays and still haven't watched it, but now it's at the top of my list is Will Smith's Bright on Netflix.
Man, I accidentally watched that. I really had no idea. So I was, you know, up on the top of the list.
Yeah.
Man, I put it on and, man, it was like a gritty as fuck comic, you know, cop drama. But, you know, with Lord of the Rings, it was like Training Day meets Lord of the Rings set in modern day L.A.
Yeah.
You know, it was gritty as fuck. And it was like had orcs and fairies and all this. I'm like, after it was over, I'm like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Some crazy shit. Well, that is another one that was very divisive. Audiences love Bright and critics hate it.
Oh, wow.
So I read the critics' reviews out of the gate and see if I wanted to dive into it right away. And I was curious, too, just to see what they were saying about the film. And critics hated it. So I was like, this must be, I wonder if this is going to be, is this Green Lantern bad? Like, is it? Then I started hearing people on the street.
Yeah.
Everybody loved it. People said, you got to see Bright.
There was almost like a Tarantino-ish quality to it. Like, I like Tarantino because he kind of samples other movies and takes a little bit of this and recontextualizes. Bright just seems like it took all these cop drama tropes and kind of remixed them and threw in these, you know, fictional type characters, you know, I guess species or whatever you want to call them.
I like that. You know, it had a 32% critical score on Rotten Tomatoes, critical wise. It's not even close to that, is it?
No, I mean, it's not the best thing I've ever seen, but it's not the worst.
It's worth a watch.
Oh, 100%.
From what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just amazing how sometimes, but in the case of Last Jedi, on Rotten Tomato, the difference between Last Jedi and in a film like Bright is that it was a flip-flop. The critics were unanimously on board with Last Jedi. It had a 91% critics rating on Rotten Tomato.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good. That's an A. I mean, that's an A on Rotten Tomato from the critics. That's not a split decision on the critics. But for the fans, the last I looked, it was close to 49% from the fans review, which means it's basically a split down the middle for the fans.
Everything they just said is wrong.
I'll look at the we'll see what the latest is. I'm curious what the latest score is on Last Jedi. Here it is. Yeah, it's 90% Rotten Tomato for critics. It's getting 49% liked it in the audience score.
Man, you know, like among other things, man, I do a spoken word. And one of my pieces I wrote, it's like, if what I do doesn't do it for you, it's simply not for you.
Yeah. Know?
And it's kind of way I view other art, music, film, and such. Like, if I don't like it, it's not for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, like Justin Bieber, I'm not a 12-year-old girl. Like, I'm not the target demographic, you know? Like, you know, why would I complain about Justin Bieber? Like, I'm not who it's for.
It's not for you, yeah.
And I think some of these people who didn't like it, like, maybe it's just not for you, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, maybe it's not the wide net, you know, New Hope was, or...
Yeah. Well, what gets an example of something you didn't get and like at first that you kind of warmed up? Well, Fight Club would be a good example.
Yeah.
You didn't warm up. At first, that didn't really draw you in, but then you were like, this is actually really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, the biggest takeaway for me with the Last Jedi was, man, you know, it's like, man, things have been kind of fucked up lately. You know, Donald Trump.
In the real world.
Yeah, Donald Trump. Man, it's like these mass shootings. Man, it's like sometimes you run low of hope.
Environmental disasters.
Exactly.
Been kind of scary.
It's like, man, my biggest takeaway from The Last Jedi, it was like, man, I went to go see Last Jedi and I left with a new hope. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like sometimes, you know, like when things are darkest, that's when you have hope. Like, that's how you get through.
And it took your mind off of all those things you were mentioning for that 2 hours
exactly.
and 20-something minutes.
And it reminded me, like, how important hope is. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a friend who's going through some stuff, and I was like, no, you got this. And she's like, I hope so. I'm like, you're using the word wrong. Like, that kind of hope is, like, wishy-washy, wishing things were better. Like, no, fucking hope as a noun. Mm-hmm. All four letters capitalized. Like, hope is, like, really fucking important. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, you look at the whole, you know, saga. Man, all the, you know, trilogies and all this. Man, they've been through hell. Like, yeah. Man, it's trying to save a galaxy.
Look how much it aged Obi-Wan in the span of, you know, so many years.
Exactly. And it's like down to a handful of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Luke was, you know, like when I was talking before, man, he's a very messianic character. He was struggling with, is he, you know, to live up to the legend, you know, and giving people hope. You know, then he shows up and, mm-hmm. you know, as the force projection and stuff. But, I mean, it seemed like he was kind of coming to grips with giving people a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
You know? And then, like, at the very end, you know, you see the kid with the broom, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, man, there's hope. I mean, like, things are pretty fucking dark in that universe. But it's like, they have hope, you know? I'm like, the noun hope. And, you know, he's like talking about, like, okay, they may not win, but they've planted the seeds. No.
Yeah, they set the kind of set things up. Is there a chance that Luke didn't die? And that was sort of a trick?
No, it's like as far as dying at the force projection, like I haven't read a lot of the books, but a lot of the things that I've seen explained, you know, it's like, oh, it's in this book and that book.
Yeah.
And I can get how that might, you know, can kill you. I mean, it's their story. If this is a Jedi power.
It's a combustion after using so much of the force at one time. It just sort of that's so much force used at one time.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, if they die after a projection like that, I get it. But, it's
using a lot of energy.
Yeah.
What about Snoke? Do you think there's some people have speculated whether it's on the internet, whether that was a trick, whether Snoke tricked them and he might not even have been there. He might have been doing force projection himself.
I'm not sure. I don't know if we were.
It'd be a nice little twist.
Yeah. But you know, with Snoke, it was like, man, in the, was it Empire?
Uh-huh.
And we didn't know a lot about the Emperor. Mm-hmm. He knows his background. And it's like, I don't know, with Snoke, maybe another movie will, you know, reference, you know, some of his backstory.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
they're going to get to it. It's going to happen. There's enough people that care about it that they're going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a matter of whether it's going to, and it may not even happen in the trilogy that we're watching right now. It may be in a standalone film.
Oh, yeah.
It may be in a book. They may not have time to get to it in this trilogy. It's very possible. I think we'll get to Rey, though. If there's any more details about Rey that there is to be known, they're gonna get into that.
Man, Hux was a different character in between these last two movies.
Like, what way do you see that?
Man, he was almost Monty Python esque in Last Jedi.
Uh-huh.
The movie before, he was a little more Hitlerish. When they use Planet Killer Base or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm like, man, that. With him in front of the flags and all the stormtroopers. I'm like, man, you're a little bit Hitlerish there.
Yeah. Did you like the evolution that they did with that?
Yeah, or? No, it's like I really like the humor. Like some people complain there's too many jokes. Like, man, they worked, you know.
I liked all the jokes, but there were a few that didn't work for me. I thought the milk and the cow part was a little bit too much for me. I don't know if it was funny, but I don't know if it worked for me as well as it did for other people. I like the Poe Dameron.
That was also non-pasteurized, you know, sea cow milk.
Oh, I knew it.
Giraffe cows or whatever they were.
Uh-huh. The Poe Dameron stuff, the interaction with Hux
at
the beginning, I liked. I thought that was really good. I thought that worked.
Oh, yeah.
I liked throwing the lightsaber off. After
it was handed to 35 seconds,
even though it took too long to get to it, awkwardly, I liked.
Man, that was a dick move, and it was even a bigger dick move to wait 35 seconds.
Yeah, that was weird. And then I loved the Chewbacca porg. That worked. That worked for me on a high level. I liked a lot of the dialogue that was supposed to be funny worked for me, and being funny and working.
Yeah.
With the stuff with Luke Skywalker and Rey, I thought was the strongest parts of the film, which is where I'm a little scared because I thought the best parts of the film was Luke and Rey. And I think also Adam Driver's Kylo Ren, I think, are the three big bullet points for me that made the film. And now one of those three key things is going to be gone.
Maybe,
unless he comes back as a Force ghost, which is probably going to have to happen.
Oh, I completely agree, man. The Red Room fight. I mean, that was just so visual.
That was probably a tie for like best scene in the movie. I tie that with Yoda coming back as my two favorite parts of the film.
Oh, man, when was it Holdor? When she did her maneuver?
Yeah.
Lord Darth. It was like, silent for about 10 seconds.
I like the silent. And there were some people that criticized the silent. I thought the silent was a great touch.
Man, I just it kind of had this weird anime like look to it. Like,
I don't know if I bought into her wardrobe and purple hair with the character.
Yeah,
I don't know if that fit for me. That was a little bit Hunger Games, but I liked her, the actor, and I liked her character.
Yeah,
and I liked the scene that you're talking about.
Maybe she was at a cocktail party prior to this.
It's possible. Yeah, because she was supposed to be a general, right? I thought it was odd that she looked like she'd been in a cocktail party throughout the entire But
hey, she's a general and can wear heels.
But hey, look, if I was given a chance to direct a Star Wars film, I would throw out the net pretty far and see what could I do. Like, what could I get away with? I mean, it would be like the dream come true, because can you imagine all those years of playing with Star Wars action figures, and then you get to play with real Star Wars figures in real life?
Man, it's like we've been getting a movie every year for the last 3 years,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Man, Solo is coming in, what, May?
May, yeah, it's scheduled for May.
Man, it's kind of throwing my system off, you know? It's yes. like going to fall, I got football uh-huh. until right before playoffs, then a Star Wars movie, and, you know.
It's like getting a second NFL season every year.
Man, it's like, you know, I look forward to seeing the Star Wars movie. Man, football's a great diversion for, you know, 4 months.
It's like we had the Super Bowl in early February, like you normally do, and then we start season two in April.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's over before September, before the first season starts.
Oh, man.
That'd be crazy.
I like the December, getting a movie in December, but, you know, like you said, it's their franchise. It's
well,
their
we'll have the May film, but then we won't get the Christmas film this year, like next Christmas that we got. We won't get a Christmas 2018 film. So we'll get Han Solo for May if it stays on schedule. But here's the thing. There's a little bit of controversy around that now, because Deadpool 2 apparently moved its weekend to where it's right up against Han Solo now.
Oh, wow.
Which there's a huge, like, fuck you saying, oh, come on, let's see what you got against Deadpool 2.
Man, I'll go see both of them.
Yeah, hey, I'm fine with that. I'm totally with you.
It'll be a doubleheader, man.
Well, yeah,
double feature.
Oh, shit, they released those at the same like week period. I would totally go see those back-to-back. It'd be an entertaining back-to-back of films. And I agree with that. And now we'll see what Jazz 1 agree or disagrees with.
Oh, yeah.
Agree or disagree. Number one. Following the release of Justice League, there were whispers on the web that Disney Marvel films might have had operatives that bombarded Rotten Tomatoes to drag down Justice League's score really low. If that is true, do you agree that Warner Brothers could have retaliated by bringing Last Jedi's score down to its current 49% score?
Man, I wouldn't say it was them. I've heard some grumblings that some people, as part of the alt-right, you know, these neo-Nazis,
yeah,
kind of took a, you know, I took umbrage at the diversity and
I've
such,
heard that.
And
yeah.
You know, The Last Jedi,
mm-hmm.
and part of them is what's tanked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, maybe the whole, you know, Rotten Tomatoes score from the people, maybe, you know, it's riggable. You know,
yeah. That's been a criticism of Rotten Tomatoes, and Netflix had a similar problem, because the whole thing with, I think Amy Schumer had one of her movies or one of her specials,
yeah.
and it was brought down on with the reviews really low, to it was where it didn't seem to match with the actual content and the quality of the content,
yeah.
and that apparently was another like campaign very similar to that, what you're mentioning, where it was a group that was unhappy with her and her political leanings,
yeah,
and they were purposely on a campaign to try to bring down her movie, her score. I mean, I think the Rotten Tomato was only around the 50-60% part on her film that she did with Goldie Hawn. I think
yeah.
it's called Snatched. Film's very funny. I mean, it didn't do nearly as well at the box office as it should have, but it was in the Something About Mary level of funny.
Oh, damn.
It was way better than it should have been. Talk about a film that didn't come out with a, and it got pretty decent reviews with critics, but the score. So again, it may be time maybe for Rotten. I know Netflix has revamped how their films are rated.
Oh damn!
Within the platform, I don't know exactly what they did to change it, but they did because of that very reason. Because of these campaigns that sometimes to take down a movie, just as a group. You know, kind of on a mission to take down a score.
Yeah.
But Rotten Tomato, it may be time maybe to
it might be, man. Like
to look
you said,
at their system.
In between, like, the alt-right guys and just people who, you know, maybe this movie wasn't for them.
Right. It's just like we were talking about. Some things are just not for
it's
you.
It's like the movie didn't live up to your head canon.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not the Star Wars movie you were expecting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know. To me, you have to be okay with it. You know, it's their piece of art. It's their creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they may be. So they've received a lot of criticism in recent years because of that very reason.
Fucking Nazis.
Number two, agree or disagree, a bunch of Huxes. Agree or disagree, number two, will you and other film goers find themselves buying tickets in about 20 years from now for the Colin Kaepernick story based on his whole plight in the NFL and how he was part of the what became a ongoing movement?
Yeah. Oh, man, I could see that happening. I mean, right now, we don't know how that movie ends.
Yeah, I don't think we do.
You know, like, the whole story of it's not over yet.
Right, it's not not really.
Yeah, but it kind of depends on, you know, I mean, I guess if, when things are based on a true story, we just don't know the full true story yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I could definitely see that.
Do you think he'll get back into football? Or do you, is it too hard to tell right now?
Man, my issue with we call it Kaepernick.
Yeah,
was he had a good career? I mean, he had the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, starter.
Yeah, he kind of peaked. I mean, it's like some of these we call them
almost won the Super Bowl. Yeah, should have really won the Super Bowl.
I mean, it's like some of these college players, like, man. No, not a big fan of him, but Tebow, great college player,
right.
Flopped in the pros.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of times people's windows open and close.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like I could respect, you know, his stand.
Right.
But as a football guy, like, I think he wasn't a fit, you know? I mean, I know there's a lot of people can go like, oh, look at so-and-so. But it's just like, if it doesn't work, I mean, we're talking, there's what, 30 NFL teams,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just, I mean, it's hard to make a team, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I really, see he has a future and,
yeah.
Like I said, I can respect, you know, like his stand, you mm-hmm. know, I get where he's coming from,
mm-hmm.
you know, I just don't think he was, you know, I think his window as far as a football player, I mean, it's like when he was a backup, you know, mm-hmm. For the Niners.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in there. Who was he backing up? I mean, he would kind of come in.
The guy that's with the Chiefs now?
Yeah.
He was the starter originally.
Yeah, he would come in. He's a different type quarterback, but it was just kind of not many plays.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, I don't know, like the year when he took over the, you know, first string quarterback for them. He just wasn't producing,
yeah.
you know.
He's got to be in a certain bubble,
yeah,
contained in a certain bubble to be able to get the best kind of best
yeah,
out of him.
It's like I mean, I like the guy. Like when that he played that Super Bowl, mm-hmm. you know, I found out he was an adoptee. I'm an adoptee.
Mm-hmm.
Like I related to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish the cat the best, but I don't think it's football that is his future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's politics, maybe it's activism, maybe it's mm-hmm. books, or, you know, he's got a future. I'm just not sure, you know, where it is.
Yeah. And what will be going forward. Maybe.
I would watch that movie though.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. Well, you lived through it too.
Yeah.
So definitely we'll be able to compare notes and see whether it's accurate or not.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But I agree. It's definitely a story. It's not completely over yet. We're still waiting on it and to see where it's going to go. Number three. Oh, here's an interesting question. A sub question to that question. Okay. So I talked about Hannibal Buress the other day on the show. Hannibal Buress is the guy that was a comedian that did the whole, kind of got the whole Bill Cosby
yeah.
thing going with that video that went viral from his stand-up act. And I had said that I think the Hannibal Buress started the whole, by bringing the Bill Cosby thing, I think that led to the Harvey Weinstein, which led to the others like Louis C.K.
Yeah.
And I mean, many others go on the NFL network, the whole NFL network. I mean, several others that have been now brought out for various sexual harassment or sexual assault or even worse. But I had said that one single thing with Hannibal Buress may have started that whole revolution, possibly. Could have very well. If we had not gotten Bill Cosby, we might not have gotten Harvey Weinstein. If we'd not gotten Harvey Weinstein, we wouldn't have got Kevin Spacey, because it opened up kind of, it made acceptable to finally be out in the open with your allegations and not be ignored, I guess what I'm trying to say. So I'd said that with Hannibal Buress, he may have very well have started a revolution, and then you could say the same thing with Colin Kaepernick because of the attention he got from taking the knee and where that led and how that dominoed. Again, it started a revolution of sorts. So I would ask the question, which of those two would you contribute more to starting the revolution that followed?
Oh, man. Like with Hannibal?
Do you think I'm giving him a little bit too much credit?
Okay, I guess to me it's apples and oranges, because like with a lot of the, sexual harassment stuff, like that's been bubbling under for the longest. Like if it wasn't, Hannibal bringing that to light, that was going to come to light. No,
in some other capacity from somebody else. He just ended up being the guy that got that was the one that did it.
And it's like with Cap taking a knee. I don't know. Like to me, I think that was, I don't know. Like I get the issues of why he did it, and like that was kind of different. I don't know. To me, it was a different thing. This is football.
They're very different environments and very different situations. You had Leah Remini too, and she's the one that kind of has started to go after publicly Scientology.
Oh, wow.
And her in doing the interviews and the talk show and kind of being the first person that's had kind of the cojones to turn against Scientology after being in Scientology and then bringing out all the stuff about them. So it's interesting. Number three on Agree or Disagree, former child star Corey Feldman. Now, since I wrote this question, there's been some new news about Corey Feldman, because now Corey Feldman is being accused of some sort of sexual harassment or sexual assault. I don't know all the details. But former child star Corey Feldman had originally planned to raise $10 million with his campaign on Indiegogo. He wanted $1 million for making the movie Choreography. This was his plan. And the rest of the money was to be used for legal expenses, preparing and mailing campaign perks. You know how all the Indiegogo stuff goes. Well, and he also said he needed the budget for armed security for 2 years. The Indiegogo ended up raising $273,000 out of the $1 million goal for the film budget alone. So would you agree, from a filmgoer and a filmmaker standpoint, that the reason why he didn't get the money he wanted was because his plan was to make the film a scripted, acted-out film rather than a documentary? Would it have made a bigger difference if he had pitched the movie as being a documentary?
Man, I think a documentary probably would have been more economical.
Yeah. Definitely would have been more economical.
Yeah.
And the thing is, for me, if I'm looking at it, even if I believe in the cause, which I do, I believe in the cause that he's campaigning for, whether I believe his intentions for doing it are all in the right place, I believe that the actual cause he's doing is in the right is a right cause.
Yeah.
It needs to be pursued. But I think I would have given it more credibility and more belief in the project if it had been pitched as a documentary.
Yeah.
So that's my thing. Because when I look at, again, you look at that, you need a much bigger budget to be able to do it on the scale of needing actors.
Yeah.
But my issue is I don't know what his resume, because he was talking about doing the directing and the writing and the producing himself. And I don't know what he's directed, produced, and written. Is if he's directed and produced anything that's been substantial. So like, okay, we're going to give you money over on this Indiegogo for you to make a film that you're going to direct, produce, and write.
Yeah.
I'm going to entrust someone to do a documentary that has little experience over doing a scripted film with actors.
I don't know, man, in a weird way. Like, I get the issue, but it's also a little self-serving.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of the issue I had. Would you like to do thoughts and advice?
Thoughts and advice.
Thoughts and advice from Jazz One. To close the show. And I didn't tell him he was going to do thoughts and advice, so I'm totally springing it on him. So let's see if he can freestyle it.
All right. Like I said earlier, man, like hope. It's important to have hope. Like, don't just spell hope with all small letters, H-O-P-E, like all caps. Like, it's important, man. Like, especially when things are darkest, mm-hmm. you know, have hope. And it's like, man, every time I saw, I've seen the, we call it Last Jedi 4 times. Mm-hmm. Saw it opening night, saw it with an ex, I saw it with a friend, saw it.
Different theaters or?
Yeah, different places.
Yeah.
Man, each time, you know, man, the hope that I left with was worth like the $10 or whatever that I spent. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, I haven't really had movies that left me with that much hope. So, I don't know. It's like, we'll get through it. You know, things may be shitty now, you know, but we'll get through it. You know, like with Trump, with the way things are kind of fucked up now, you know, we'll get through it. Don't lose hope.
A lot of stuff going on. It's a deep, some deep stuff right now. It's pretty wacky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, I went to go see Last Jedi, left with a new hope.
Love it. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Hope.
Exactly.
Don't lose hope.
Exactly.
Thunderpop was not recorded in front of a studio or audience.
Should people subscribe to the podcast?
They should definitely subscribe to
the podcast. Where can they subscribe to the podcast at?
They can go to iTunes and they can subscribe at iTunes.
Oh, yeah?
They can also go to our website and always listen directly to the podcast from thunderpop.buzz.
Thunderpop.buzz. Is that with two Z's or one Z?
Two Z's.
Two Z's.
Buzz. And they can follow us on Instagram at Thunderpop Show.
Oh, yeah. Thunderpop Show.
They can follow us on Twitter at the same spot, and they can find us on Facebook at Thunderpop.
Oh, see, you should follow, you should like, you should love.
Follow, like, comment, all the above.
Review,
copy,
all that.
Copy, paste.
Tell a friend.
Hate, love, all the above. Because hate is better than ignore.
Exactly.
It means you know we're there.
Exactly.
So hate us, but hate us in a... In a cool way, in a nice way. Don't get cray-cray. Get yourself kicked off of social media.
Exactly.
Everyone have a great day, month, hour, second, millisecond. Whatever it is you want to have it.
Now.
The now as well. Peace. Jazz one, thank you. And Thunderpop is a Hit the Bricks production.